What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Verzi Effect podcast show. My name is Paul Verzi, and today you guys are listening to an extra bonus TVE, I guess, movie slash horror movie edition. Okay, as you guys know, through October, and a little bit of November, I've been watching a ton of movies, dark movies, horror movies, getting into those. And I'm going to be bringing on a horror movie director on the show, a movie director who's had a couple of movies. He directed a cult classic called Oxymorons, which took place in Boston some years ago, and people took a liking to it. And then he just did a psychological horror movie thriller called Habitual. So he's going to be joining me soon, and we are going to talk about horror movies. Now, the reason why I wanted to do this was because I'm trying to figure out what's the difference between a good horror movie, a bad horror movie. And again, this episode of TVE is pretty much strictly for movie buffs, not just mainstream movies, but people that will just sit up at night and just put on something that's either gory, suspenseful, you know, really dark, really tragic. And for some reason, we love crime in this country. We love watching shit like that. And I wanted to figure out, you know, we always talk about like, that movie was corny. That horror movie was just too gory. It was just blood. The killer was corny and tried to be funny. It sucked. Then that one was too dark, or that one was really like cold. And so we're going to talk to Johnny about that and a bunch of stuff that makes not just a horror movie, but like a psychological thriller with twists and turns. Also want to talk about kills. Okay. Now, not to be like weird or anything, but when you watch a horror movie and you watch somebody get killed, as horrible as this is to say, you want it to kind of be like realistic. Like, I don't want to see the knife go like this. And then, you know, like in the 80s or early 90s, you just see the guy go like this with a knife, does that, and then blood squirts on a curtain, and then music starts playing and it's into the next scene. You know, we're above that. This is about to be 2022. So you gotta have some really kind of, I guess you could say, realistic, intense kill scenes. So that's another thing that we're going to talk about with Johnny when it comes to this. Now, I haven't just been watching horror movies. I've been watching these like whodunit. I spoke on the last TVE, which is out now with Jessica Kearson. Check that out. By the way, guys, thank you so much for liking and subscribing to my YouTube channel and checking out the Verzi Effect. A lot of people who listen to my other podcast that I co-host with Bill Burr have now jumped on to the Verzi Effect and seem to be really liking it. So I really appreciate that. But on the last one with Jessica Kearson, you know, I talked about this new movie I see. Anytime I see a movie, whether it's on Amazon or whether it's on Netflix or on demand, anytime I see a new movie that I want to review, I would like to talk to you guys about it, give the Verzi Effect, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down or whatever, and just, you know, let people know my thought process. So this is a spoiler alert right now. Spoiler alert right now for The Woman in the Window. So if you don't want to hear about it, I'm going to say what happens in the movie right now. So if you don't want to hear about it, basically you can cut this off and wait until Johnny Hickey comes on, director Johnny Hickey, and we can, you know, and you could listen to that. But right now I'm going to discuss The Woman in the Window with Amy Adams. Gary Oldman's in it. Julianne Moore is in it. Basically what it is a glorophobe, or I forgot the name, but Amy Adams is afraid to go outside, whatever that phobia is, agoraphobe or something like that. I don't know. Amy Adams is living in this apartment, I believe in New York City, on like 121st Street. She's petrified to go outside. She won't go outside. She talks to her therapist, but everybody comes to her. And she knows everything going on with the neighbors because she's bored. She's inside all day. She looks out the window. She knows who's moving in. She knows this. She knows that. And she tells her therapist about it to the point where he knows all about it. Long story short, one neighbor stops over, a new family that moved in from Boston. This kid comes over. He's a little weird and kind of something's off. And she realizes that maybe things aren't good at home. So she says, you're always welcome here. She hugs him. Like, you could come here if you know. And she looks in the window and she sees Gary Oldman is the husband. And she sees that he's like a little bit rough. And she sees that like he's a little bit abusive and yells and all this and that. So Julianne Moore comes over and she's like, oh, are you the wife? And she's like, oh, what makes you say that? And long story short, they sit down, they drink wine. They have a great time. They talk for a long time. Anyway, Amy Adams is now looking in the window and sees Julianne Moore get stabbed. Now, all the while, Amy Adams is on medications. She's on a medication that could cause hallucinations. She is drinking wine all the time, sleeping on the couch, staying up late, doing all that unhealthy shit. So she starts reporting like, yo, you got to come. You got to come. And the cops show up and the cops are like, we went over there. Like, everything is fine. Like, what are you talking about? And she sees like Julianne Moore, like bleeding, like in her vision and getting stabbed in the kitchen. They're like, no, nobody's there. It's like, I saw the wife, get the wife. So to convince her, the cops bring the husband and the wife over. And she's like, I'm the wife. And it's not Julianne Moore. It's another woman. Okay. It's another woman. So she's like, they're like, what are you doing? Like, you got to stop harassing these people. Like, you know, we found out you're on meds. Like, you know, and it comes to find out there's two twists. Okay. One twist in this movie is that, you come to find out the reason why, I left something out. During all this, she's talking to her husband and daughter who she separated from because of all this, but is like talking to him and he has full custody of the daughter and like trying to be supportive to her. Come to find out, that's not true. She also has a neighbor she has a tenant that lives downstairs. There's a scene where it finally comes to a head. Everybody comes to her house. The cops, the neighbors, her tenant, and they're all like, you got to stop this. This is delusion. And she just has this moment of clarity. And then there's a flashback to her driving in a snowstorm with her husband in the passenger seat, daughter in the back. They get into a fight. He wants a divorce. He says she was cheating on him. They're fighting over the phone because the phone rings during the car ride. And I got allergies. The phone rings. It's going to happen again. The phone rings during the car ride. He goes, why don't you get it? That's probably him. You know, the guy she's cheating on. And she's having this flashback while everybody's in her house, basically saying you're fucked up. And you're harassing families and you're looking out the window and you're causing big problems and blah, blah, blah. And, she's like, you got a young boy that's all scared and he killed his wife. And they're just all there, almost like an intervention. And then she has this epiphany memory. And he goes, why don't you answer it? That's probably him. And they're driving in the snow. The phone drops. She reaches for the phone. He goes, watch out. They fall off a cliff, come to find out that her family died except her. That's why she has the phobia. In her mind, she's talking to them, but no, that's why she doesn't go out anymore. Her husband and daughter died in that moment in the car thing. And they show the scene of a car in her apartment with snow falling while everybody's standing around watching her. It's a really, really amazing scene, I think. And she just goes, I'm so sorry. She has the epiphany. She's like, I'm so sorry for what I did to you. I'm so sorry for what I did to you. Now, there's 30 something minutes left in the movie. So something's got to give. That can't be it. What happens is she's laying down going through her phone and she realizes that when Julianne Moore was there, a picture was taken of her cat next to a wine glass and Julianne Moore's face was actually the reflection on the wine glass. And she goes, oh my God, she was here. Like, so who's that other woman? So come to find out that Julianne Moore was the boy's mother. And the woman that's living with him now is just a stepmother. And she sees a picture and she shows the tenant downstairs. She goes, look, like, I'm not crazy. Like, she was in the house. And the tenant goes, yeah, like, I slept with her. I was like hooking up with her. But she was just some lady that like she was trying to visit. And she was not really, they didn't want her to see. She came from Boston to see her son. But Gary Oldman and the new wife don't want anything to do with her because she's a little fucked up. She did get killed, but it was by the son. And then the son comes to kill Amy, the tenant, and Amy Adams. But Amy Adams ends up getting out of it. And then the cops show up in the hospital and say, you were right the whole time. So sorry. And of course, at the end, she obviously leaves the house, walks outside and tries to go on with her life. I hope I explained that the right way, but that's pretty much what it was. So the husband and daughter being alive, talking to her on the phone was a delusion because they died in this thing. She was always looking out the window. Saw Julianne Moore get killed and say she was in my house. They said, no, that's crazy. The reflection on the fucking glass showed that it was, and it happened to be the son that she was looking out for the whole time who was crazy. That was the mother from Boston that Gary Oldman and the other woman didn't want around. So the whole thing ends up coming together like that. Now, this is the Verzi Effect movie bonus edition. So that's why I explained that whole thing. But what makes that movie good is there's a psychological, there's a twist. She is mentally fucked up and delusional because of her meds, but there was a murder. There is a sick killer who's just stabbing people. And it just is like, that's the difference. And I think that's what makes a really good, good movie. With a killer, with a murder. I like those personally. I like those better than just some like, I don't know. I like those better than some like, just like some corny killer who's, you know, slashing and then, you know, it's silly. And, you know, I also watched this movie called The Butchers, where these two backwood fucked up country guys, when people would break down in their cars, they would take them, they would like rape them, and then they would kill them and chop up their body parts. And they had some freak in a barn that they would have eat people. I mean, it was fucking nuts. And then last night I saw a movie called Midnight in the Switchgrass, I believe. And that was about a serial killer, a trucker serial killer, killing girls in Pensacola, Florida. And the cops are after her. Bruce Willis, Megan Fox, Machine Gun Kelly's in it real quick. He did a great job, and that kid could act. And who else? And the dude from like In the Wild, he was the cop going after the serial killer. But what was cool about this movie, and you can watch this on, I think it's on Amazon Prime, Midnight in the Switchgrass. What's cool about this is, you know who the serial killer is the whole time. You see him getting the girls and you see the cops trying to track him. So it was done different, where usually they're like, they got to get a beat on the killer. They got to find the killer. Who is the killer? Is it this guy? Is it one of the cops? Is it this guy? You don't know. Those are cool, like the whodunits. But when you know who the killer is the whole time, and you see his life and what he's doing, and then you see the cop's life, what they're doing, and then try to come together. So that was another good one. And these aren't all like gory horror movies. These are like suspense thrillers with the serial killer, almost like just crime movies. But then I like when those cross over into horror. And Johnny Hickey, my guest, who should be coming on the show any minute now, will be talking about what he did with Habitual. And, you know, and also we will talk about his movie, Oxymorons. Johnny is a director. He's from Boston. He's got the accent. If you listen to the Verzi Effect, he was on a long time ago to talk about Oxymorons. I would say hundreds of episodes ago. But we're going to get into movie making with him, how he got into movies. He got me into the movie Blood Circus, which is on Amazon Prime. I'm the first fighter in this underground fight to death by this MMA guy who they kidnap his son. And the way that he could make money and get his son back is he's got to fight these people to the death. And I'm the first one. Johnny got me into that, movie. So Johnny Hickey is about to be on the show here, which is pretty exciting to talk some movies with the director. You guys can see this movie on Amazon Prime right now. It is called Habitual. I'm going to bring him in as soon as he, what's it called? You know, as soon as he accepts the link here, which we scheduled. So, yeah, got to check out Johnny Hickey's movie Habitual. But that's what I like. Those are the differences that I like, where it's not just some corny, you hear the music and you see the feet and you see a knife being held and a scream and then it's it. It's like, that's the old way to do it. I think the new way to do it and the new movies that I want to watch intertwine. You know, it's kind of the way hip hop, you know, what's it called? Hip hop and, you know, R&B mixed, or the way like hard metal mixed with like a melody that's like softer. I like the merging of it, especially when it's like a whodunit horror. That's why I like the movie Scream so much. Scream is a classic, the original Scream, not Scream 4 when they're off in college and somebody's doing it. Not this shit. I'm talking about like the first Scream where Drew Barrymore answers the phone. That is a classic movie because it is a whodunit, but there is a killer. Now it's a little goofy. The killers get fucked up and thrown down the stairs, you know, by like these small women. I get that part. Listen, it's the 90s. I was in high school. But the point is, I think the reason why it's so good is it was both. You're going like, who did it? And oh shit, that person just got slashed. That person just got slashed. So let's see where Johnny is. And we will go from there. I'll just talk for a couple more minutes. If I don't get it, I will give him a call. But yeah. So if you like movies, if you're into talking movies, if you're into talking horror, this is the podcast for you today. This is a Verzi Effect bonus edition, movie edition. This will be out soon. I'm going to be talking about movies. Like I said, check out if you like dark, tragic, really kind of scary, like, oh my God, like could evil like that exist type of movie. Check that one out, man. Check out The Butchers, which is brutal. Maybe one of the most brutal things I've ever seen. You could check that out. If you want, check out, like I said, Midnight in the Switchgrass. Check out Woman in the Window. These are all kind of like, well, the Butcher is just cruel, brutal. The other ones are a little more like, make you think a little bit. And you know, I think obviously I spoiled The Woman in the Window, but if you want to see the acting and all that stuff, you will really, really love that. So let's see what's going on here. Okay, guys. So here, here is my friend, director Johnny Hickey. I will admit him into the room right now. Here we go. Let's see. Waiting for him. Johnny, what's up, buddy? Can you hear me? I'm keeping this part of the thing just because it's so funny. Because
I got a new.
Well, I was going to keep.
No, I got a new computer. I had to redown. Yeah, I have a new computer.
No, no worries. I was going to keep on trying to get you on just because how funny it is when we've been doing this for 2 years and people still, you know how many times I get on and people still, you know, you can't get the sound on. It's fucking hilarious. But so I just want to fill you in on where we're at right now. So this is a Verzi Effect bonus edition, movie edition, which is coming out. And I was talking about at the beginning, I think what I really like as far as the movies I like that are psychological thrillers and horror movies. Okay. And we're going to get into the movies that you did. And I already told the audience, you know, who you are. I will do that again after I explain this to you. But I like when the psychological thriller, the whodunit, merges with horror, because we were used to growing up in the 80s and the 90s and it'd be a guy with a knife and he would do this and then you would see blood on the curtain and then it would go to the next scene, where now they're doing real kills. But what I even like more is there's a psychological, like almost like it's almost like a crime movie, but it's mixed in with horror. Those are the things that I'm really into now. And in October, I watch horror movies all the time. Because it's Halloween time, and you know, and now I've been watching crimes that have a killer that's brutal. So it's not labeled as a horror movie, but it's like a brutal killer. Now, everybody, real quick, Johnny Hickey, director, Boston, Massachusetts. As I said at the beginning of the show, he directed the cult classic Oxymorons, which was about robberies of pharmacies, of people getting Oxycontin during the opiate just fucking take off, where people were
based on
true events of Johnny's life with addiction and opioids. So what he did, like the you know, smart dude that he is he took a negative, turned it into a positive, and with making that movie. And you'll love that movie. And now his new movie, Habitual, which is a psychological twisted, I was watching some of it yesterday and last night before we did the podcast, but I'll give the quick of it. And then I want to talk to you about what your idea was for making it kind of like a psychological thing and a horror movie. So Habitual is basically a group of kids want to go to this kind of deserted area where there's a sane asylum buildings, and they want to do a rave there. There's a rave, old school rave, glow sticks, you know, partying, drinking, hanging out, and these guys are doing drugs in the car. And then, I mean, talk about all hell breaking loose in this place with this killer, and people are getting killed. So Johnny, I'll give you the floor. Tell me the thought process on Habitual, and all of the, just talk about the movie and why you did it and how you did it.
Well, the rave thing that you mentioned, it's funny. I used to rave back in the day, like before my drug crazy Oxycontin world. I was like a young raver, and we'd go to I'd go to New York around your way. I'd be in New York at the boo parties, all these like crazy events. And I was into like throwing little rave parties back then too, to make money, and just throwing these like dope, like underground, like parties in the woods, wherever the fuck we're doing. And I've been like a horror fanatic since I was a kid. So I always had this like fantasy of throwing a rave in an abandoned lunatic asylum on Halloween. I thought that would be like the dopest thing, that people would come. You put a DJ in a fucking building packed with asbestos and rave and dance in the dust all night, right? And never got to do that, you know. Never, you know, it would be really hard to pull off and probably fucking light a building on fire or get caught. So that never happened. But fast forward into like my movie creating ideas, I wanted to do a horror film, and I wanted to tie the rave culture into the horror film. And then I was like, shit, why don't I do what I wanted to do years ago and actually create a rave in these abandoned lunatic asylums? That will be the backdrop of the movie. That will be like one of the, you know, the plot layouts. And I was able to gain access some fucking how to these.
Of course you were.
To these abandoned lunatic asylums that now don't even exist. When I filmed just a couple years ago, when we were on the ground doing production, that was the last year that they were going to exist, and they tore them down, and now they built like high-end condominiums. So people live in these like haunted fucking buildings and shit. It's crazy where people were tortured. But the state gave me permission to go in and film in there. So we created a rave scene at a venue I found in Rhode Island, actually, that you performed at. Remember the Fetty Music Hall?
Yes.
Remember the Rhode Island place when we did that crazy cooking tour?
Yes.
So my mind's always working. And when we were in that place, I was writing Habitual at that time, like it was okay. Called Habit at the time, but I was trying to create the idea when we were on tour. And that venue has that, if you remember the inside, it has that like antique kind of structure to it, you know, it has those silhouette windows. So I ended up gaining access and actually throwing a rave at Fetty Music Hall that we make look like it's inside those asylums that we filmed all the horrific and exteriors and interior like murders in. So that rave in Habitual is actually Fetty Music Hall where you performed.
Okay, because I wanted to ask, and you got a lot of people in there, man. That's the thing. When I was looking at it, when I was watching last night, and I realized like the amount of people that were jumping up and down in there, and it was just so fucking packed. But Johnny, explain this to the listeners. I mean, I know some people are gonna know, but I know that there's gonna be some people that don't know. What's the difference between, and it may sound like a stupid question, but believe me, a lot of people don't know the true definition, and I know you do. What's the difference between a rave party with a DJ or just going to a nightclub with a DJ? Like, what does a rave bring that a regular thing doesn't bring? Or is it
A rave is just a completely different culture because there's no structure and it goes all night long. You know, the rave would go from midnight till 6 in the morning, sometimes stretch even until noon. I've been to raves that lasted 2-3 days. So there's no shutdown. There was never no alcohol really either. No one did booze because everybody was doing designer drugs, ecstasy at the time and ketamine and all that, including acid, hallucinogenics. And some people didn't even do drugs. Some people belonged to these things called straight edge crews, and they would literally just go there to fucking throw rainbow shit all over them and dance all night to techno music and house music and jungle beats and, you know, the different genres of EDM kind of stuff.
Okay.
And it's hardcore, and it's hot, and raves are hardcore electronic dance music, whether it's house, jungle, dubstep didn't really exist back then. I guess jungle would have been like that part of the rave culture, you know, when it originally existed. Breakbeats, that stuff. There was no hip hop. There was no rock and roll. There was no pop. It was this, you know, the hardcore 130 BPM, like.
Not many lyrics, kind of
just sounds and beats that, you know, and especially when you were doing the designer drugs at the time that were a lot safer back then than they are today, not to promote them back then, but they were definitely, people weren't dropping dead from doing them. You know, I mean, it did happen, but it was far and few between. Whereas now the storyline tied into Habitual is like, you do those kind of drugs at these kind of events, and it's not really what you think it is. It's, you know, cut with fentanyl or something else that's, you know, can be. And that's kind of where I twist the crime world into the horror. That's the, you know, that's how I blend that in.
And you did something in this movie. And I don't want to give it away because I really want people to see the movie. But you made a killer. And this is what I love. Because I was just talking about this movie, Butchers, which I saw, which kind of fucked me up, man. It was these two brothers in the backwoods, and they, you know, cars break down in a deserted road, and they're like, you know, something's obviously off, and they're chopping people up, and they're raping people. I mean, it was really brutal, but a brutal killer is a must. A killer, for me, I'm out if the killer's goofy. I mean, I loved the original Scream. Just because I loved it was a whodunit. I was young. I was in high school. But, you know, they're falling down the stairs. They're doing stuff like that. For that time, it's a classic. For the first one, I'm talking about the one with Drew Barrymore. But your killer in this thing, it's just a ruthless, like brutal, like, you know, just the, it's there's no, it's just like dragging with chain. It's a brutal thing. And I guess that was a strategic move, right?
Yeah. Because Habitual's not like the spooky. I mean, there's jump scares and stuff like that, but it's not your typical like ghost Freddy Krueger. Right. It has those elements too, where it's this like malevolent kind of creature spirit thing, but he's brutal, you know? And that was something that for me as a horror fan and knowing horror fans, like they want gore, they want brutality. You know, when you watch those, like the Green Infernos, the Eli Roth kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just the bone breaking, skin ripping, that graphic stuff. Like, it's not about like, oh, I'm scared that this ghost is going to be in my house tonight. It's more of like, while you're watching the film, whether you're in a theater at home, it creates stress, right?
It's yes.
Like the movie creates stress. And then his impact on how he kills people. And if you kind of see how I do it, it's layered in a very chapterized part of the movie where the kills all kind of flow, right? Whereas yeah. other horror movies, like someone gets killed and then you're following two more people that are like, you know, who's down there, that kind of stuff. This is more like he's can be everywhere at once too. So you can't even, as you're trying to figure out how he's doing this stuff, he's just taking out the whole cast, right? He's just taking out all those ravens.
Yeah.
And brutally killing them. And that was something that I didn't want to slack on or lack in the storyline with that stuff. And then the makeup effects too. Like I used a lot of practical stuff where you were saying earlier when you were talking about horror films back in the day, you know, someone get cut and blood hit the wall and then, you know, Psycho style.
Yeah.
Which was cool back then because that's what you had to do to kind of make a horror movie. And now you have the world of like visual effects, which are like top-notch visual effects can look really good, but like nothing beats the stuff like similar to what we use in Habitual, like practical effects where like you see something and it looks like this person has really had their head bashed in or their brains are really hanging out kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, and you're good at that, man. You're really good at that because, and I noticed that because anybody who saw Oxymorons that listens says, by the way, if you don't, Oxymorons is so cool because it's like, there's robberies, there's the acting, it's like you feel Boston, you just feel what was going on with people that are addicted. It was really good. But there's a scene in Oxymorons where I don't want to give anything, if you didn't see it, but there's a scene of a stabbing. And what I like that you did in this is you didn't do the typical movie stabbing. You did, I've talked to you about this before too. You did a stabbing where it's, if you chose to stab someone, that's how you stab someone. Like if you mentally say, I'm going to kill that person, you're going to run. There's not going to be some dramatic, you know, you're going to go up and you're going to, yeah, exactly. Like with, you know, with you, you did it kind of like you feel like how it would be done in a prison or how it would be done if you just run up to somebody and start shanking somebody.
Like you're jerking off a bag of dicks.
yeah. And I don't like when like in a movie when they go like this and they go back and then you see the reaction. It's like, no, it's not like that. That's the reason why my favorite killer is Mike Myers, because he does it with no, Mike Myers will just grab you by the throat and stick something in your head and it's over. Where like Freddy and Jason was more of like a comeback type thing.
Yeah. Michael Myers is probably my favorite out of the iconic, like, and that's what I wanted to create, like the Blight character in Habitual. I wanted to create kind of an iconic horror figure that you'll remember, you know, you'll remember that thing after you see it. You'll remember that mask. You'll remember that, you know, and it's played by my friend Chris E.T. who did amazing. He's really big on camera. He's a big kid anyways. And he's, you know, he's like 250 and he's super agile as well. So there's scenes in Habitual where he's like flying through the air and you must think that I use trapeze fucking shit and green screen. It's not, it's just literally him like jumping off of like fucking doorways and stairwells in this asylum, you know?
So there was no,
Cause my films, I guess there's a studio level to my films where you watch them and they look like a real movie, you know, the color correction's great, the effects are great, the sound, the score, everything's the elements of watching theater, watching cinema. But on set, when we're shooting, we do a lot of stuff, and you've been on a movie set with me before that wasn't particularly mine, but even still, we work some stuff on there that we don't really go by, you know, we're still like guerrilla filmmakers on the ground. So you're doing this stuff that a lot of studios won't do because it's like a stunt risk or a, you know what I mean? It's a liability or whatever. And obviously I'm willing in my independent film career to take these risks to make stuff look as real as possible. And luckily we were able to pull it off, you know?
Yeah. Well, I remember with the fight scene you were doing, you know, like obviously studios are afraid of stuff like that. But when you're coming up and you're making independent films and you guys took the chances to make it look really realistic. What do you enjoy? This is a question I wanted to ask you on this too. Do you enjoy making the horror movie more than you did the other, or both are you enjoy both the same way? But like, so I guess what I'm trying to say is, did you making this horror film make you want to go more into that more, or you could go into it now, next thing could be a freaking bank robbery movie or a love story, or you don't care?
I'm torn honestly between the two genres. It's hard to compare the two because Oxymorons is a crime drama, obviously, but if you've seen Oxy a few times, I think. So,
yeah,
you know, there's horror elements in Oxymorons, those dream sequences, right?
Yes.
So if you take
towards the end of it, it gets a little, towards the end of Oxy, it gets like you're in kind of some weird, you see visions of that.
And so Habitual is kind of like 90% of that stuff, right?
Yes.
And then a smaller percent of the crime drama, the reality of like the kids leading up to that. And that's what I wanted to do. When I did Oxymorons, the cut now is 1 hour and 47 minutes. The original cut was 2.5 hours. And it had all these like crazy, horrific dream sequences in it, because as much as I love crime dramas, I'll watch a horror over a crime drama any day. Horror is just, that's my thing. But I know both worlds, I guess. You know what I mean? They're kind of one and the same. So I like combining the two. But in Oxymorons, to get that release on Netflix and everything, when we first released it, I had to take, they wanted me to take out all the kind of horror stuff. So there's a, you know, like 40 minutes of like footage that was removed from Oxy of like more horror. And they wanted me to make it more towards the, you know, the true events kind of concept. Yeah. And I was able to leave some of it. So I'm this, you know, my next film is a writer director. I wanted to do a horror, and doing a horror honestly is like, it's fun. Like doing those, you know, I did makeup effects and stuff on Oxy too, obviously, because it's like, you know, there's murders and stuff in it. But doing that, the horror, I kind of want to master that a little more. You know, this is my first touch at it, and I got great reviews. I won a ton of awards, but I think I want to go a little deeper in the horror world. In that genre is kind of open right now for like new faces, and you know. And you can get away with so much in a horror film as far as like cast and stuff. You can, you know, you don't have to necessarily have big names in it to sell it, to get it out there.
I think most horror movies that are classics don't have big names in it. I think because people just want to see whatever it is, like you said, it's either the gore or the kill and stuff like that. So basically it's safe to say we could be talking right now to the next John Carpenter here, because you want to go into this world and you want to master, your first horror movie has got like I said, an epic killer, and it's just a psychological twist. But that's cool that you want to go back into it. So you said it was fun with the blood and like doing all that stuff, right?
Oh my God, it was crazy. I mean, not only the makeup effects and stuff are great, but like also those locations, you know? So shooting the crime drama, like shooting Oxy, like I got to shoot in a prison and stuff, which was kind of cool to like recreate those scenes and make that, you know, that world. But like to be able to go into like these like, you know, abandoned lunatic asylum, like, nobody gets to do that. No filmmaker really gets to do that. You know, studios will build a set to look like that that costs millions of dollars, or hundreds of thousands of dollars, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So to be able to gain access to like a world like that and then create a storyline of like this fictional thing that, you know what I mean, it doesn't exist, but you're creating a story that people in those, there's way more to it, you know, than just a simple crime drama or a comedy or anything like that. I mean, all that stuff's fun, but that world and like those locations and creating something that you know, creating a crime drama is telling a story, and it, you connect with people, obviously, which is great. But when to create horror and to like fuck with people's heads, that's another level of filmmaking, you know, not only with the horror and like the gore and stuff, but the psychological aspect, to psychologically be able to get into an audience.
Yes.
And mess with their mind.
Yes.
And have them talking about the film after, trying to figure out what the fuck happened.
Yep.
That to me is real filmmaking. That's like the next tier.
That for me, that's what I was saying before you came on. And I was talking about how I love when the two worlds merge. I love when the horror can also make you go, oh, dude, that had a twist. And that was actually made me think. And that's why that person did this earlier in the movie. I like that shit as opposed to, like you said, like a ghost or a Freddy or a Jason, you know. So that is, I think the next step in movies like that will be psychological thrillers. And I think you're ahead of it because you did it first. But I think like the what's going on here, right?
Right.
Like, and you're stressed out. So not only are you going like what's happening here, but you're stressed out. You got this guy killing people. You don't know what's happening. And then boom, you get hit with a twist. By the time the shit's over, you went on a ride, man. What would you say, Johnny? Because I know a lot of people listening to this, and hopefully all the Verzi Effect listeners are going to watch these movies. But what would you say to somebody listening to this that doesn't have money and wants to scrap together some cameras? They have a good movie idea. They want to put something together with their friends or with whatever money they do have. Because you basically, you know, like your friend Ben Affleck said, I'm a kid going around the streets with a camera. What would you say to a young filmmaker who's obviously in the independent world, who wants to make their first film?
Just do it. Like, do what you want to do. Don't, if you're going to do a short film, a lot of people go with the short film as a first time.
Uh-huh.
If that's what you want to do, do that. But if your goal and your main, like, you know, optimistic, like, view of what you're trying to do is to make a feature film, and you have it, you know, done, you need a screenplay, get your screenplay done, get your story done. You know, once you have that in order, it, you know, make it is for the best you can, go for it. You do your best to raise money, get locations, you know, get the right camera you want to use, a good DP, you know, put all the tools together that and the assets that you can get. But at the end of the day, all you need is a camera, obviously, which is you can use your fucking phone these days. On you can, you know, you really could get away with it.
They actually made a movie with an iPhone.
Yeah, and get it done. Get it done. And if you even if it's not the level of, like, I was lucky and was able to raise, you know, decent funding, not like multi-million-dollar studio budgets, but decent funding for both my films. And I was able to raise, obviously, I'm a hustler and I go and I have the equity of, like, getting those asylums and getting good makeup effects artists. Get whatever of those assets are you can get together, but then just make your movie, you know? There's a story you write, there's the story you shoot, there's the story you edit, and there's ultimately the story that everybody sees wherever it ends up. And you have the ability now to shoot something, even if it's like a found footage style horror film, if that's like your thing, with this phone, with a small cast, in a simple location, and then get it up on YouTube and start getting people to know who you are as a filmmaker. You know, maybe you'll go above and beyond that in your quest of, like, getting investments and distribution and all that stuff. But just get it done.
Yeah, well.
And don't listen to people. Don't let people talk you off the cliff of, like, well, you should just make a 5-minute short and then try to raise money. Because it's going to set you back 5 years, you know. Just go get your thing done and it might be the big hit.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one thing about you, Johnny, that you know, you were, from when I met you, man, you're just a dude that, you know, it's not a coincidence that everybody that's successful that finishes projects has that mindset. Everybody who's successful has the thing of, like, you know, first of all, cut the people out of your life that are like, you're not going to do that. You can't do that. How are you going to do it? It's like, if you're with that person, it's going to set you back. That they don't have the capability of doing it. It's like you said, man, go make it happen. If it ends up sucking, at least if the worst case scenario is you try to put it together, you write it, you film it, it ends up sucking and you learn from it. That's the worst case, because then you're not going to make the same mistakes on the next one. But yes, you are a hustler. You made it happen. You made two movies that, for your first two movies, I mean, I don't know anybody who makes movies, the one and two, first two movies like that with what you worked with. So what is next, man? What are you working on, a new movie or?
Yeah, so I have another psychological horror film actually called Devil's Detox. And it's so one of the things that I'm trying to, I guess, do like a niche thing for me personally is because I come from this, a chapter of my life anyways, and even as a kid with like family members around me and stuff, drugs have always played a part in my life. And I haven't struggled with addiction personally as much as people around me have. I did have my moments, but I was able to break out of that, you know, with a near-death experience, turn my life around and take all that negative shit and turn it into a positive. And because I got that success with Oxy, that's why Habitual also has the drug, you know, the fentanyl, MDMA kind of, you know, other plot line within the story. And so I'm trying to keep drugs, but not make it cliche in all my films, because it's such a current thing where like you have these movies where people are like, you have this massive group of like teenagers, all like the people in the new Halloween movie, and you got all these people, but none of them are on drugs. Like everybody's just drug free. And it's like, that's not the world we live in today, sadly. Right. But right. So I always want to kind of show the collateral damage and be able to tie that into my movies, whether it's a crime drama or a horror film. So what I'm doing with Devil's Detox is I'm touching on these drugs that aren't really drugs that get you high, I guess, but they're these hallucinogenic spiritual drugs, like DMT, which you hear Joe Rogan talk about all the time, the fucking shit that comes from the frogs, and it's the chemical in your brain that releases when you die. Did you hear about this shit? You know about this shit?
I know what you're talking about, but that's wild, man.
So there's that. And then Ibogaine, which are these detox drugs. There's these drugs, Ibogaine's one of them, and this is the main source drug in Devil's Detox. I've done some crazy fucking research and went down a rabbit hole on this shit, obviously, but it's a South African drug of all places, right? And there's a tribe called the Bahiti tribe, and they believe that when you take this substance, this Iboga, that for one, when you do take it, you viciously hallucinate for like 3 days straight.
Wait,
like,
and this is real.
This is a real thing. This shit's been around for forever, I guess, you know, but they tried to bring it to the US in the 50s. It got denied, and people will leave the United States, and you can get in the United States, the shamans and stuff that do it, but people typically will leave the United States to go do, say, like ayahuasca or Ibogaine, which is South African, and they'll go do this, and they claim that after they do this, and there's videos and all stuff online, that you never use drugs or alcohol again. The belief is that a spirit enters your body and gets to live a second life through you, right? And that this spirit prevents you from using narcotics and drugs and mind-altering substances after that, because if you do, it will have to leave your, it will have to leave you and won't be able to live through you. Some wacky shit, wow. Right? It gets deep. So the spiritual aspect of it is like, you got to take it with the proper shaman, a doctor, witch doctor, whatever, in a good place with good energy, with good spiritual stuff, so that you're reborn, not with this negative stuff, and you get all this stuff out of you, and now you're clean and sober. People swear by this. There's like testimonial.
What? Really?
Yeah, like, yeah. And
that's fascinating.
So now I decide to take that concept in that reality, and someone gets the stuff but takes it in a place that has bad energy and is already cursed and haunted in its own way. And so the 3 days of hallucinating in this detox facility, the person in this movie, becomes a vicious horror movie, which is similar to Habitual but not the same way, borderlines reality and what is really happening.
Wow, that's fascinating, man. Holy shit, I had no idea about that. And I'm sure, obviously, if you're gonna do a movie,
look at when you're bored and you want to go down the rabbit hole. I got into, because I would listen to, like, you know, Rogan and stuff talk about DMT, and then I knew about Ibogaine because of, I've heard of like people in the recovery world like doing this stuff and swearing by it, and ayahuasca and stuff. And it seems like way too trippy to me, you know, like there's videos where people have to be like tied down because they think they're like on fire and stuff. Like, it's crazy. And I've met people throughout my, you know, my networks from Boston to Miami to Los Angeles that have done this stuff, that have done like DMT. And what I noticed, I'll meet someone in Miami that doesn't know the person in LA that I know that did it. in their stories about what they seen, little weird things were almost identical.
Wow.
You know, I'm talking down to like a type of bird. Like I seen a brown eagle flying over me. This guy, I seen a brown bird flying over me. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, how could you see, have seen, taken this thing, seen the same thing that this kid in Miami did?
Yeah, that's wild.
You guys have never talked and don't know each other. So I kind of went down the rabbit hole, and it's just it's a current thing, and it's a subject that is out there and people are talking about and people are definitely dabbling in more than anything else. And so I think it's a cool way to kind of touch the drug world, but not go cliche with like the street drugs necessarily,
right?
Like opiates, and just kind of switch it up, you know? So
well, that dude,
so that's what's next.
That's awesome. That's fascinating shit that I didn't know about. And one thing I wanted to talk about was, you know, I lost my brother-in-law at 30 years old to drugs. And I know that your movie Oxymorons, and I'm sure, just so people know, you helped a lot of people, right? I'm sure you got a lot of messages from people that you helped them, and they said, oh, thank you, right? You saved my life.
Still to this day, I'll get messages on Instagram and Facebook, wherever. And, you know, when the movie was like at its like peak of like audience and fans watching it, especially when it was on Netflix and stuff, my box was flooded with those kind of things. And just one of those would be amazing, to for one person to reach out to me and tell me that I, you know, changed their life or inspired them to do something cool. But when I get messages, and I never thought it would be at this level, and it's really cool that it is, of like someone saying that, you know, in their mind, they have their custody of their children today, and they're working and they're not doing drugs because Oxymorons fucked with their heads so badly. And anytime they feel like on the edge of relapsing, they throw Oxymorons in their DVD if they got deep or wherever they fucking watch it. And it prevents them from, it gives them like, one kid said, it's like going through a run, you know, like a run of doing drugs and ODing and all the stuff that you go through, like in a typical, right, like, you know, bender, I guess, you know, it's like going on a bender without going on a bender. Like sitting down and watching Oxymorons under the stress of like, I want to get high, reminds them of all the things they may have already been through or don't want to go through, and prevents them from relapse. And that's amazing. You know, that stuff to me is, you know, that's beyond filmmaking and
and
being cool. And I love, you know, what I've been able to do with movies and my career and stuff, like, and the level I'm at right now is, I'm like, I love it, but like, changing people's lives, that's a whole nother, like, that's just like, that's life changing. That's doing more than what fucking, you know, the doctors are doing for people on addiction and stuff like that, where they're just giving people, you know, some treatment drug that's keeping them in the revolving door. So
yeah, man,
that stuff to me, like, it hits hard in a good way, but like, is also like why I want to kind of continue the drug stories in my projects, you know. I feel like it's a redemption for me, and it's pointing out something good, you know what I mean? And it's all coming back. I believe in all that energy
100%.
But it fucking works, you know, it does. I live by it.
100%, man. You get back what you put in. And you know, when I talked about my depression, when people reach out to me about that, you know, it's amazing that you know, what you do, somebody writes you a letter saying, dude, when you talked about depression, I didn't realize that you could do that. Or I didn't realize that I'm not alone, man. Somebody like you, who I watch on stage, and I think, you know, they see you make movies, they see me on stage, tell jokes, they think we got our shit together. Everybody goes through it. So to let people know that,
No, I'd be out with you, you know, when we used to hang out more, like when you know, things were just different in our careers and stuff, and me and you were like at clubs together and, you know, just doing different stuff. I remember that phase you went through. I remember you talking to me about it, but I had just been with you a short time before that. And we did nothing but like piss our pants laughing the whole time with like just the insanity of like things we talked about. And
yeah. And you said something to me that stuck out. You were like, cause I told you what I was going through, and you were like, man, I remember the phase where you're just popping, you say, you're popping Xanax like Skittles or something. And it was like that phase that I went through in 16, but I was able to go on podcasts and talk about it and let people know it's okay. And yeah, man, another thing I wanted to say to you in front of my fans is that I appreciate you coming to my special, man. You're one of the few, you know, you're one of the few people well, actually, I had some people travel out of state, but you actually came from Boston and you sat there and you watched it, and we're looking to release it in January. So I'm excited.
I mean, dude, I you know, the first time, you know, the story, the first time I seen you shit on Boston, and I loved it, you know. Yeah. Like, I was like, this dude can make me laugh shitting on my city, being from New York. You know, you were an instant friend that night. And yeah, clearly, like, obviously, like, you know, Bill Burr's obviously was like a friend of mine, and that's how I met you. And he's an amazing comedian. He believed in you and has always had you, yeah, you know, kind of on the road with him and stuff. But from that day, and then me going and like doing stuff with you, and then me and you doing that comedy tour and just watching your jokes and just the humors, I've always believed in you, bro. I've always just thought you. So to be able to come out to your second special, because I wasn't able to make the first one because I was doing the movie stuff, and I was bummed. Dude, I was so bummed that I didn't get to be at your first special. I hated that. That was like I was torn between like whatever I was doing in LA with post-production and like making it out to you in New York that time, and I wasn't able to. So this one, when the opportunity, I did. I just got in the fucking car and I
appreciate
drove.
And you know what? Another thing that I appreciate, and I want to say this for everybody there, is when I was thinking about doing my first special and we didn't have anybody big or a big service like Comedy Central, you were like, hey man, if you need, I'll fucking do it. And it was like, that means a lot, but driving out to the second one means a lot. So I appreciate it. But before I get you out of here, I got to ask her. I know we went a little longer. Holy shit, that was a fast 40 minutes. Where can people?
Was it really?
Oh yeah, yeah, that was 40 minutes.
We didn't even get to shit on the Halloween movie.
Yeah, dude, I love. That's the thing. Yeah, let's talk about that real quick before.
Got to talk about that.
We got to talk about Halloween real quick. So here's my thing. Mike Myers is my favorite. Mike Myers is my favorite killer. Like I said, he grabs you. I will say this about the new Halloween. There were a couple of kills that were epic. The two that I loved. When he kept killing Lenny Clark, when he kept stabbing Lenny Clark in front of the woman he put the thing in the neck and she's just watching. That was good. The problem with that movie was, and we talked about it too. You tell me what you think. I mean, you make horror movies now, but the scene in the hospital where all these extras are going, evil dies tonight. And it's like, first of all, no emergency room has that many people. Then they go after the wrong guy. It was overacting. What did you think about that?
That destroyed it for me. Cause I was a fan of the Rob Zombie ones actually. And there was some Rob Zombie ones that I was like, kind of like, yeah, that's goofy. You know what I mean? At the end with his wife on the horse and whatever the fuck was going on. Like, I was like, what's going on here? Where are we going with this? But the kills when he gets Danielle Harris, you know, the girl and the friend in the first one, you know who she is, right?
The friend in the first one.
The friend in the first one.
Yeah.
So by the way, I just did a movie, two movies with Scout, the girl that plays Jamie Lee Curtis's character in Rob Zombie's movies, Michael Myers' sister. Okay, Halloween yes. 1 and 2.
Yes.
I just did two different films with her. So she was just in two movies that I did as an actor, and she's an actress in them, ironically. But the girl, Danielle Harris, that's her friend in that gets slaughtered in the first one, doesn't die, but then she gets killed in the second one. She's the little girl from Halloween 4 and 5, the niece that's getting chased around, and the clown, the star that's getting chased, the little girl that's supposed to be Jamie Lee Curtis's daughter.
Okay.
Halloween 4 and 5. Rob Zombie cast her as a different character in 1 and 2 of his
yes
Halloween versions.
Yeah.
And like when he's dragging her on the floor and she's bleeding with her shirt off, it's just so brutal. And like when he gets the guy in the stall to take his outfit, the big dude, the Mama yes. Jack, whatever. That's and even Danny Trejos, who like was the one dude that was like nice to him, and he was just like, fuck you, I'm killing you too, and drowns them in the
yes.
in the sink. That stuff was so brutal to me. And even just the development of Michael Myers as a kid in the woods, killing the kid that was like the bully.
Yep.
Loved all that. Cutting the fucking stepdad's throat. It was like nonstop. Like
what about the truck? Remember the truck stopped and he's walking in the field and the headlights are on him?
Yep.
And
the truck driver, yep.
And he just doesn't stop. He just
it was br- brutal.
It was brutal. I actually liked this. I liked the Rob Zombie ones better, but I got so excited about Halloween Kills, and then it was just like.
So that's the thing. So then David Gordon Green did the new ones. So I worked with David too in Stronger. He cast me in Stronger, the marathon movie that he did, which was a drama movie. You know what I mean? It's a dramatic.
The Boston marathon bombing, for the people that
Jake Gyllenhaal played the guy that's legs got blown off. And so David did that, and it was more, you know, dramatic, and it didn't get a big push, but it was a good movie all said and done. But David Gordon Green's known for comedy. You know, he did The Sitter, he did Pineapple Express. He did Vice Principals on HBO. He's a mainly comedy director at the time. You know, that's what he's known for. And so then he steps into horror, and I was always kind of worried about, like, oh man, when you put a comedy director into the horror world, is it going to be the Scream horror, right? Which is like, you know, right. The more comedic dark comedy horror, which can work for some stuff, but for Michael Myers, no, like we can't have that happen.
Right.
And the first one, I was actually like impressed. I thought a lot of stuff in the first chapter of this Halloween series was good. The one
I loved, you know, it where they lock him in the fire.
Where they lock him in the fire? Yes, yeah. That one. Yeah, everything, how he got out of, you know, going to the mental institution to see him. That stuff was all fucked up. And then he gets out and he's just brutally killing people, trying to get to Jamie Lee Curtis. Then the new one, Halloween Kills, opens up. And he survives. He great way to make him survive. You know, spoiler alert, he locks himself in the gun chest, survives the explosion. So that makes sense, right? And he gets out and he brutally fucking kills all those firefighters. Like fucking. Yeah. And then in the kills, the kills in that movie were the only thing that kept that movie alive. The kills were the most brutal kills. I think of all the Halloween movies.
The kills were great.
He fucked everybody up. But then the whole storyline of, like, we're going to get him. Evil dies tonight. And, like, the police just like, oh, we don't know what to do. And she's in the hospital. Like, I'm going to inject myself with super morphine to go get her. Like, it just was, like, it was so corny and gimmicky. And if they had said Evil Dies Tonight one more time, I was going to jump off the fucking hospital window like the fucking mental patient does. When he did that, I was like, I would have done the same fucking thing if all these people were just repeatedly saying this stupid corn. And they're like, yeah,
that was the part. I will agree with you though. The kills were epic, and I do like that. But yeah, the hospital thing and like the evil dies tonight, and that was just, that's kind of where I was just like, come on, man. And another thing too is,
then the end when he turns into fucking Chuck Norris and Michael Myers is like karate kicking people's guns in the hand, just like doing Matrix. He's like fucking Neo. He's like, you know, like fucking karate chopping a gun. And then all of a sudden he's like up in the house.
Yeah.
I don't think, I know.
How did he get to the house? But here's the other thing too. You can't put Jamie Lee Curtis looking like that, you know, older sister, whatever, you can't put her in the movie and then they never see each other. Like Jamie Lee Curtis never comes face to face with Mike Myers in that movie, or there's no altercation, there's no stare down, there's no nothing. And the trailer made me think that she was gonna finally kill him, or at least the trailer gives you the sense, the inclination that her and him are gonna have a thing, and she's just in a hospital bed and the daughter's
caught.
And the daughter's keeping it from with the cop. Yeah. So, you know, hopefully, but the one good thing is he's alive still.
He's alive still. So they got another.
Yeah. He killed her in the window at the end, right? In the room.
Yep. He kills the daughter.
He kills his sister's, his niece.
His niece. Yeah. So he kills Jamie Lee Curtis's daughter, the middle one. And then she has a daughter as well. There's a whole fucking flock of seagulls in that.
All right, man, before dude, this has been great. The time has gone by, man. We almost did an hour. This is fantastic.
Let me
ask you a question. Where can people see Habitual? Where can people see Oxymorons? Where can they go to see more of your stuff?
So you can get it. Habitual and Oxymorons are on the platforms like Amazon Prime, obviously, Xfinity On Demand, Voodoo, all that. But there's a new streaming site that my distributor created called Darkroom. And Darkroom's free. You can get it on your smart TV. You can get it on your iPhone, your Android, Amazon Fire. Anywhere where you can download Netflix and Hulu, you can download Darkroom. And it's got over a couple thousand titles for free.
Dark or Doc?
Doc Room. Doc. I know my fucking Boston accent.
Wait,
Doc Room.
D-O.
Doctor.
Doc, what's up, Doc? No. Oh, D-O-C-K.
D-O-C-K. Dark, D-A-R-K, like dark, like.
Oh, like dark. Gotcha. Dark. Okay. It was your boss. Dark. Dark Room. D-A-R-K Room. And they could download that.
Yep. Download Dark Room movies, a Dark Room streaming. You download that. It's free. And Habitual's there and Oxymorons is there for free. You can watch them right now for free, along with a slew of other titles, other independent Sundance Film Festival, anime for people that are into fucking anime. There's Alfred Hitchcock horror titles. There's all old Jackie Chan fucking kung fu movies on there. It's just a slew of stuff that you really probably can't get anywhere else.
That's and cool, then, man.
And then Habitual and Oxy's there for free. I partnered with Doc Room, and I'm loving my relationship with them and the availability for people to be like, hey, we want to watch a movie. Well, here, you can watch it for free on Dark Room. So
that's so make sure you guys go to Dark Room. If you have Amazon Prime, Xfinity, Johnny Hickey, thank you so much for being here, dude. Check out the movie. Johnny's movies are great. He's going to keep making great movies. And
Verzi's going to be in the next one. We're going to throw you in Devil's Detox. We're going to be able to make this happen.
I'm down, man. I'm down. Let's and I it. Always wanted to do a, I always wanted to be in a horror, whether I say something funny or there's something intense, let's do it. But,
don't fuck it up, fuck.
Yeah. I'll,
on the screen, be falling down the stairs. Oh,
yeah. Well, let's just
put the snuggie on.
Yeah, I don't know. The way you do stunts, I don't want to break my leg on the first day of the shoot. All right, Johnny, thank you so much for being here. Check out Johnny Hickey, man. Check out the Verzi Effect. Download the Verzi Effect anywhere you get your podcast, iTunes, Spotify. Check out the YouTube channel. This will be available on there very soon. Take care, everybody. I'll see you guys next week.
Love you, buddy.
Later, buddy. Likewise, we'll be talking.
Awesome. Later.